bring the meeting to order, please? Can I get a roll call?
Kurt Alstead. Tracy Carluccio.
Here.
Timothy Dorothy.
Here.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I have thick skin.
Michael Dressler. Michael Francis.
Here.
Robert Holtaway.
Here.
Bruce James. James Mengucci.
Here.
Carl Richco.
Here.
Jim Riley.
Here.
Michael Sevetich.
Here.
Michael Tiefank. James Vizioli.
Here.
Richard Roden.
Here.
Robert Walton.
Here.
Is the Open Public Meeting Act?
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. The Highlands Council sent written notice of the time, date, and location of this meeting to pertinent newspapers or circulations throughout the state and posted notice on the Highlands Council website.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
No.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next up is approval of September 20th, 2012 minutes, as well as executive. Can I get a motion, please?
I'll make that motion. Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion on either? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Alstead. Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes, but I abstained from the executive committee because I wasn't present at that.
Councilmember Daugherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler. Councilmember Francis.
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway.
Abstain.
Councilmember James. Councilmember Mengucci.
Yes, but abstaining from the executive.
Councilmember Richco.
Yes.
Councilmember Sevetich.
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefank. Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Roden.
Yes, but I abstain from the tax on that.
Councilmember Walton.
Abstain.
Chairman Reimer.
Yes. Next up is the chairman's report. I'll be brief. Two items. First, the Garden State Preservation Trust has a seat on the HDCB board. And the current rep was Ralph Siegel. He has stepped down from that position, and they recommended Greg Romano. So at this point in time, I am going to appoint Greg Romano to the board. And second is the MOU, just an update. We have a meeting next week. Hopefully we'll have that for our next meeting. That's all I have. Next item up is...
Yes, sir. I do have a
yes.
report. I attended the governor's town meeting in West Milford on Tuesday, and he discussed the Highlands Act, the Highlands Council, briefly. One thing he said was that he had appointed a lot of new members to the council, and he was discussing landowner compensation. He said with these new members, he's looking forward to getting recommendations about how we can, from the council, about how we can compensate the landowners. So we've discussed this in the past. I know Council Member Dressler brought it up in April, and we said that we would schedule in the future a discussion about the event owner compensation. And I'll go back to June. I have the minutes of June, and said Mr. Dressler reminded Council about having a meeting to discuss land preservation and landowner compensation. Chairman Riley responded that Mr. File is putting together a few things for the council members. Chairman Riley commented that compensation is out of council's hands in the preservation area. Now, that doesn't sound like what the governor said at the meeting on Tuesday.
I don't know.
Well, I was there, and that's what I heard him say. And so I just want to know, what are we doing with that? Well, where are we going at this point? Are we going to have a discussion as a full council about our ideas that we can pass on to the governor and to the legislature about compensation for landowners?
To me personally, I think it should be an ongoing conversation at every meeting. It never stopped. We have been trying to draft some things to bring before the council for discussion, and hopefully we'll have that to you sooner than later at this point in time. But
who's going to bring it to
you? Whether it be an HDC bank board or what, you know, has to be defined yet, but this council will be part of making that decision. I'm sorry, what was your question?
Well, my question was, are we going to have that discussion, overall discussion, as a group? You're saying whether it'll come out here and there, but I think that what the council wanted in the past, I can't speak for everyone, I'm glad that council member Dressler is here because he had brought it up, is that we...
don't worry, your name's not Darcy, don't worry.
The last thing I invite is dinner.
Is that the council would have a discussion. That's going back in April. I'd like to get the minutes from that meeting. And you're saying now that we would have, you know, ongoing discussion, and I'm, you know, that's fine, but it seems like we're not ever addressing it. Now, I don't know behind the scenes. Maybe you're addressing it with the executive director, but I don't know of it, you know, what you just said about the HD.
I've only been on this council a year, and things have changed quite a bit since I've been here, so... from my perspective, I'm early in my tenure in this job and still learning and trying to get a grasp on some of the things and how they transpire moving forward. There's members that have been on, you know, much longer than that, and this has been an open issue, I think, to the public, to this council, I would hope, and all the surrounding municipalities within the Highlands region. So the fact that it's not here today, I think, is... Where has it been since 2004? So yes, we are working on it. We're trying to work on it. We're trying to find funding sources.
When you say we're working on it, who are you talking about?
I'm working with the executive director. I'm trying to guess on this vote.
The newest member, with less time than you, but. It says in the Act that the property owner shall be compensated where appropriate. I think appropriate means according to the Constitution. We all agree on that. And since I've been here, I see a change where everybody agrees that there should be some compensation to the property owner. The only method that we have that we can work on ourselves is the TDR program. Right now, it's underfunded, it's incomplete.
Understand.
Maybe understaffed, and I believe that maybe the staff is working on that, but that is something that we could really get going here. It would be a method. The only other thing we can do is work together, all of us, try to come up with ideas to recommend to the legislature, because anything that funding that's going to come for compensation is going to have to come to the legislature.
That's what the governor said on Tuesday. He was looking forward to the recommendations, especially from the new members, for their ideas about compensation for landowners. I think that there's really, unless there's other things out there, there's only three ways we can raise money for compensation. It's through the TDRs, the direct budget line item in the state's budget, if the governor's willing to do that, or
the legislature tool.
Legislature, excuse me. And the other would be simply a surcharge on the water that goes to people in the Highlands. To water taken from the Highlands. So I mean, that's the only three that I can think of. And that's why if we have a discussion, maybe it can go to the legislature what we have discussed. And I think that's what the governor was discussing at his meeting on Tuesday.
Just for the record, I have not spoken to the governor, nor have I heard what he said at that. I caught a little blurb in a newspaper, so I have no idea the context or how he put it. I did ask to get a transcript if it's available, so I have no idea what he said myself. Mr. Dressler?
Chairman, and Carl, I don't think there's anyone on this board that doesn't want compensation for the property owners.
I think, though, if we're really interested in compensation, I've learned an incredible amount in the year that I've been on this board. I think if we really want compensation for these property owners, we have to do it in a step process. And I think the TDR process is the process we should start with right now. I know the executive director and the deputy have done a huge amount of work on this. They were up in Bergen County a couple months ago. You know, they're talking to people up there. They're going beyond the realm that we had imagined last year to try and get this done. That, I think, is the first step. Anything beyond that at this point, and I'm going to speak quite candidly, has the potential to become an incredible political football. And if we want to push something at this particular time, okay, in that direction, I think that that's exactly what will happen. It will become a political football. I think if we do our homework, we do the TDR thing first, then we move into the compensation, you know, at a time down the road, I think we're serving the public better, we're serving the property owners better, because it's going to get done, and it's not going to be tied up with politics.
Mr. Dressler, I couldn't agree with you more, and I thank you for those comments, and for pointing out that our executive director and deputy director have been working primarily through the TDR program on ways to improve that. I was hoping to bring forward a more complete package. As Mr. Dressler pointed out, they have been in Bergen County, trying to see if credits could be used up there and different venues. So there is an attempt. I agree that shortly we'll have something before you for discussion purposes. And the door is always open. If you have suggestions, certainly willing to listen to them.
Well, this is the conversation that we discussed that we would have eventually. I guess we had it today. We had discussed it in April.
Actually, I think it was the last meeting that Mr. Dressler made the very comments that he did tonight. Was the last meeting? Yeah. So it's not the first time since then. Any other comments on this issue?
We need receiving areas.
That's exactly what
we need receiving areas. We need you to talk to Passaic County and West Milford. And we need receiving areas. We need Bergen County to step up and take receiving areas. And we need some town centers in the Highlands to take receiving areas. Which is why I voted the way I did against Hackettstown. Until we have receiving areas, the TDR is not gonna function.
In a voluntary aspect.
Yes.
Any other council members, any other discussion items? We'll move into committee reports. At this point in time, I'd like to turn the meeting over for our Budget Finance Committee report. The budget has been prepared for 2015. You have it in your packet, along with the descriptions. As you can see, we have expectations of revenues, which are slightly increased. As you flow down, that increase is basically going as a transfer of the RMP account. Some items are up, some items are down. Our carryover from last year was higher than it's been in the past two or three years, which is a function of the management, being able to meet and beat the budget. There are some minor increases, legal services, as we move along, there's an anticipation of a little more litigation. A lot of other things were adjusted in small quantities and based on costs that we have incurred historically. So I went through this carefully with Randy, and it's been reviewed by the state, and I recommend approval. Any questions? Anybody have any comments for Mr. Altaway? Or questions, Robin? Thank you for that.
See you none.
Bob, thanks. just since it's topical, let's go ahead and move on with these two resolutions. Actually, you want to give me a capital budget overview?
The capital grant budget is obviously an estimate based on what has come in and what is available. These grants are done on a one-by-one basis. When we approve our operating budget, we're turning that money over to our executive director and deputy director who's operating. These municipal grants come to us on an individual basis, and we have some in our packet today. So basically this is a review of the revenues and then looking forward and what we're picking up. As you can see,
$700,000 in project closures. This is something that I think is very important, having been on different granting organizations. There are people that take grants and then don't spend the money. There's been some house cleaning, and that money is being recouped so it can be moved out elsewhere. There's always grants with $10,000, $20,000, whatever left over also, so that that's a substantial percentage of the budget. So basically, this is an estimate of the money we will have available for the coming year for grants to the various organizations as we give approvals. And again, they have to be approved at the state level, state treasurer's level, as well as by us individually. So it's a very controlled budget, and I think it's in order. I've gone through it with Herb, and everything appears to be in order.
Any questions, council members? Bob, thanks you again.
Yeah, I think. Well, I made sure Herb was good.
Yeah, at this point in time, I'd like to move ahead with the consideration of resolutions for the approval of the Highlands Council Fiscal Year 2013 General Operating Budget. Can I get a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
At this point in time, I'll open it up to the public. Would anybody in the public wish to be heard on this subject?
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. It's just a request. The resolution was on the your website and the calendar section with the agenda, but the budgets weren't. So it would be helpful in the future to include that so the public can prepare. This is the first time we've seen it. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Seeing none, any council comments? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Alstead?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler?
Yes.
Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Aye.
Councilmember Manducci?
Yes.
Councilmember Richco?
Yes.
Councilmember Sevatich?
Yes.
Councilmember Tifang?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton?
No.
Chairman Ryan?
Yes. Next resolution is approval of the Highlands Protection Fund capital budget. Can I get a motion, please?
So moved.
We have a motion. Can I get a second? We have a second. At this point in time, I'd like to open it up to the public. Would anybody in the public wish to be heard on this matter?
Same comment.
Ditto. Same response.
the
response was Margaret nodding her head like this.
Thank you,
close the public portion. Any comments from council members? Seeing none, roll call, please.
I didn't hear the motion in the second, I'm sorry.
Motion, I believe, was Mr. Francis.
Yeah.
And second by Mrs. Gucci.
Thank you. Councilmember Alston?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler?
Yes.
Councilmember Francis?
Yeah.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Aye.
Councilmember Manducci?
Yes.
Councilmember Richco?
Yes.
Councilmember Sevatich?
Yes.
Councilmember Tifang?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton?
Yes.
Chairman Ryan?
Yes. We get all the yeses in there.
That's right. That's
right. At this point in time, backing up a little bit, I'd like to turn over to Mr. Bowden for the Bylaws Committee report. I believe everybody received.
Okay, do you have a report? At the May 17th regular meeting, Councilmember Vizioli presented a prepared sheet for the Council's review and discussion. In response to his comments, the Bylaws Committee met at the Highlands Council here in the administrative offices on Friday, July 27th, and on Tuesday, October 16th. Mr. Vizioli suggested that, quote, in order to obtain more Highlands Council authority and accountability relative to supporting our executive director, we could, at this time, require a resolution that certain conditions are embraced, such as, and then recommends that we consider a list of revisions to the bylaws. These recommended revisions relate mainly to the interview and employment of new personnel and oversight of the staff organizational chart. There was also the suggestion that there shall be no Deputy Attorney General overseeing the Highlands Council, but rather a full-time Chief Deputy Executive Director. At the July meeting of the Bylaws Committee, we received and reviewed and discussed each item in the bylaws that was suggested for revision and several other possible changes that were suggested by committee members. To better understand the current process and procedures, the committee requested a copy of the Highlands Council organizational chart, copy of the original 2004 council bylaws, and any subsequent changes. Prior to our October 16th meeting, the committee members received this requested information, and we again reviewed and discussed each proposed revision to the bylaws. We were informed that there will be changes made to the organizational chart that will be considered by the personnel committee and presented to the full council in accordance with current bylaws. We were also informed that the council and personnel committee will be conducting a search to employ a chief counsel. And after a discussion and consideration of all suggested bylaw revisions, the committee agreed that the current bylaws need not be revised. As committee member Mike Francis stated, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and we all agree. Special thanks are extended to the Highlands Council board members, Tim Dougherty, Mike Francis, Bruce James, and Michael T. Tyson.
Thank you. Any comments? Seeing no comments, the bylaws will stay as is. And thank you all for your work on that, as well as Mr. Haltaway and everybody for these on these committees. Next item up is the Executive Director's Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Seems like a normal progression into a question that Member Richko asked me before the meeting, and Mr. Bowden kind of piggybacked on. What is our current staffing situation? And apparently in June, apparently I committed to get to you this information on a regular basis, so we'll start that with this meeting. We are down 3 full-time employees. We're down an attorney and a half. We are down a person in GIS, and we are down a planner. We have approval to advertise and to hire these people. The advertising is running currently, and hopefully we will get candidates to bring ourselves up to full strength. After that, we will have one full-time vacancy left. I am also very happy to announce that Cindy Torkos has been in our receptionist, the smiling face you see when you come in here all the time, has been a temporary employee for 5 or 7 years, which seems a little incredible that she has been a temporary employee through an employment agency. We had an opening in one of our clerical positions, and she is now a full-time employee of the state of New Jersey. I would add, long overdue. So we're hoping to fill these vacancies within the next month or so, and get a chief counsel on board, as well as a senior counsel, and add one more person who was a vacancy in our planning area, as well as our GIS. So that's our status on employment. Okay, plan conformance continues on target. Of 60 petitions that have been filed, 43 have been approved. A few more are in the queue, and we anticipate seeing them in the future. Implementation is our new watchword. We're maturing in conformance, and now we're starting to implement the plan. That's moving along nicely. There's a report in all of your packets about the status of each municipality. Wastewater management plans are also high on our agenda. We completed 31 for our conforming municipalities, and we've done 4 consistency reviews for our non-conforming municipalities. The effort that we talked about earlier in reaching out to other communities, counties, constituencies, has continued aggressively. We attended 26 different meetings since the last meeting. We went to Hunterdon County there early morning, 7:30 in the morning in Hunterdon County, breakfast meeting on their economic development. We attended the 6 county coalition meeting. We went to the New Jersey Sustainable Communities Consortium meeting, State Planning Council meeting, and we went to Passaic County and talked to them on an economic development basis and opportunities that they might offer in other programs such as CDR.
We had a visit with the New Jersey Highlands Coalition and presented them some of our thoughts ongoing, and certainly welcome that opportunity. So that is basically where we are going, and some of the logistics that happen here every day, and some of the things that don't happen here every day, I will roll into next, and that is redevelopment. As you heard at the last meeting, we have a redevelopment program that's part of the Act, part of the RMP, and we tried to give you a little background on that. Tonight, we have a practical application of that program. And to introduce you to that and to lay out this for you for action and an official vote, I'd like to introduce Chris Stannis, our Director of Planning and Science, and Chris Ross, who will do the actual nuts and bolts presentation. I guess you probably feel now that after last meeting, the only people we have working here are Chris and Chris, because they did the presentations at the last meeting. But it just so happens that Chris Ross is our lead on redevelopment, and so you'll see her this meeting. You probably won't see her the next one. We'll have some other faces, although it's always good to see her face.
Thank you.
Chris Stannis, would you introduce us to this redevelopment project?
Thank you, Gene, and Chairman and Council, and I'd like to recognize the work of 700 Bartley Road, LLC, Uncommon Carrier, Mount Olive, in bringing forward redevelopment applications that, as of right, recognize the nature of the Highlands Preservation Area and working with the Highlands Council in the Preservation Area. This is in Mount Olive. It's in a general industrial zone. It is about a 20-acre parcel. It's 19.6 acres. It is leased to Uncommon Carrier. And Uncommon Carrier is a prime subcontractor. And I'm going to mess this up, but it's Givaudan, yes. And they're located in Mount Olive in the International Trade Zone. And so actually, these are two companies who are operating in the preservation area under redevelopment planning to date and moving forward with their business models. It's a currently developed 155,000 square foot commercial building with an attendant parking lot. The redevelopment include the adaptive reuse of the building from office manufacturing to warehousing, and the reconfiguration of the parking area to accommodate tractor-trailer usage. The business models for commercial activities typically include parking. It's part of their business model. It's part of what's required. And therefore, when you do redevelopment, you're also looking at what's that parking configuration and how do you need to address it as part of the redevelopment. In this case, actually, the parking lot is part of the business model. It's for the tractor-trailers that actually Uncommon Freight needs to move the goods. So we evaluate that. We evaluate in the context of the RMP and the DEP preservation area rules we collaborate and coordinate on. So I'm pleased to present this project today, working with Chris Ross and a great staff that evaluated it, and she'll bring you the nuts and bolts of the redevelopment project.
Thanks, Chris. As you recall, as Jean mentioned, at the last council meeting, we reviewed the procedures for Highlands redevelopment area designation. One of the points I made, which I want to reiterate again today, is this is a two-step process. First, an applicant comes to the Highlands Council for the redevelopment area designation. You review and deliberate, and if you choose to approve it, it then goes to the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection for their permitting process, which in this case is a Highlands Preservation Area Approval, HPAA, with redevelopment waiver. So this is tonight the first step of the process. As Chris mentioned, the project is 700 Bartley Chester Road in Mount Olive, block 6800, lot 10. The applicant is 700 Bartley Chester Road, LLC. I just wanted to recognize that the applicant is here tonight, along with their attorney, Richard Stein, and their engineer, Mark Dunasuk. And they'll be available to answer any questions you have about the project. The complete details of our project review were posted on the Highlands Council website on October 1st for a review period, a public comment period that lasted through October 15th. On our website, we posted a staff recommendation report for consideration, as well as a consistency determination. So all the details in the project that I'm presenting to you today are available in those documents. As Chris mentioned, the property is leased to a company called Uncommon Carrier, which provides warehousing and transportation services. And as Chris said, their prime client is Givaudan. The existing property has a commercial building on it that is about 155,000 square feet. There is a parking area, existing parking area, as well as maintained lawn. The proposed project is a reconfiguration of the parking to accommodate tractor trailers, which is a key element of Uncommon Carrier's business, and they need this reconfiguration. As I mentioned at the last meeting, redevelopment projects come to us in one of two ways, either as a brownfield, a contaminated site as determined by DEP, or a site that has 70% impervious surface. So this proposed project met that 70% requirement, as is shown on this slide. This slide shows the parcel boundaries. The parcel boundary is this white line. The proposed redevelopment is what's outlined in yellow, and the impervious surface is hash marked. The proposed parking area would be right to the east of the existing parking. As I said, it's maintained lawn. These are planted ornamental trees. The proposed parking would be here, and then the trees would be replanted here for aesthetic purposes. The Highlands Council staff conducted a resource analysis. As I said, the proposed area of the reconfigured parking is existing maintained lawn. However, our Highlands GIS database showed a wetland on the lawn with buffer. The applicant's engineer did a wetland delineation and determined that there are no wetlands to be encroached, no open water buffer to be encroached. They did identify a wetland complex to the east of the property. And we do not have a letter of interpretation at this time from DEP, because by course, DEP does not issue the LOI until they issue the HPAA. So as you'll see later, one of the conditions of approval is the DEP confirms the wetland delineation conducted by the applicant. Next resource, carbonate rock area. The entire site is located in the carbonate rock area, as is a large area surrounding the site. The site engineer confirms that there's no karst features. Karst is the problem area of carbonate rock, but there are no karst features on the parcel. Next resource is vernal pool buffer. The proposed parking area lies within the 1,000-foot vernal pool buffer that is an Highlands Regional Master Plan standard, not a DEP standard. We did an analysis and determined that the vernal pool for which this buffer exists is about well over 500 feet from the proposed parking. There's commercial development to the east, to the north and east, which serves as an effective barrier for any migration of vernal pool species from the vernal pool to the parking area. And the proposed parking area is maintained grass lawn, which does not function as core vernal pool species habitat. So the Highlands Council staff is recommending a waiver of this Highlands RMP standard. And the last resource is the whole parcel lies within a Tier 2 wellhead protection area. However, the proposed project is a reconfiguration of parking. It will not result in the discharge of persistent organic or toxic chemicals into the groundwater. Also of note is the applicant is proposing a brand new bioretention basin, which will enhance water quality and groundwater recharge as compared to the current stormwater system. This slide shows the vernal pool buffer. You can see this is the edge boundary of the buffer. Again, here's the proposed parking reconfiguration, and this shows the commercial development. The vernal pool is somewhere in this area. DEP does not provide the exact location of vernal pools to keep that protected from the general public. But you can tell from our buffer, it's somewhere in this location. And here's the commercial development surrounding it, and then the maintained lawn.
That is certified?
Yes. Perfect. Yes, it is. The staff also reviewed the proposed project with respect to the Regional Master Plan's goals and objectives regarding smart growth and sustainable economic development. you'll see this slide list how the project is consistent with those goals. As Chris mentioned, while the parcel is located in the preservation area, it's also located in the general industrial district zoning of Mount Olive. The project doesn't create a substantial change to the existing development pattern of the area, as the surrounding parcels are all commercial development. As I mentioned, there was a public comment and response period for the public to provide written comments that started on October 1st and continued through till October 15th. We received one set of comments from Erica Van Ocken from the Highlands Coalition. We received those on October 15th. They were immediately forwarded to the council. And then the following day, on October 16th, we prepared a comment response document where we summarized the coalition's comments and provided our Highlands staff responses. And that was posted to the Highlands Council website on the 16th. Today provides an additional opportunity for the public to provide oral comments for you to consider prior to voting on this matter.
Is a very large development directly across the street from this?
Is what, excuse me?
Is a very large development directly across the street from this?
Yes.
Probably about 300,000 or 400,000 square feet.
So it's our Highland staff recommendation to approve this redevelopment area designation with conditions. Quickly, one, which is a typical condition on all of these, is the DEP must waive the 3% impervious surface standard in the preservation rules. Second, as I mentioned previously, getting the letter of interpretation to verify the wetland boundaries identified by the applicant. And third is to ensure adherence to all stormwater water regulations. And as is typical with these redevelopment projects, the DEP works with the Highlands Council staff to ensure the use of best management practices and low-income impact development. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we're very pleased that the applicant included a bioretention basin as part of the stormwater design. And the last thing I want to mention is the Highlands Council has approved a similar redevelopment area project. It was, in fact, the first redevelopment project that the first council approved. It was for the expansion of or reconfiguration of a parking area in West Milford. That was Mr. Schwartz, Oak Ridge Road. So this is not precedent setting with regard to reconfiguration of a parking lot. So with that, I'll turn it back to Gene.
Thank you, Chris. I'll turn it back to the chairman.
Before I open to the public, can I get a motion on this, please?
I'll move it.
Second. We have a motion and a second. At this point in time, I'd like to open to the public for discussion on this matter only. Working together.
Okay.
That gives you only 3 minutes instead of 6.
It's all right. We can do it.
My name is Erica Van Ocken. I'm from the New Jersey Highlands Coalition.
And I'm Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition.
In general, the Highlands Coalition supports redevelopment in the Highlands. We've long considered it the most effective way to bring opportunities in the Highlands without further stressing the important environmental resources of the region. Having said that, there is no reasonable way that anyone can consider this proposal a redevelopment. Clearly, it is an expansion of existing impervious cover. The appropriateness of this project is one thing, but we maintain that it is absolutely inappropriate to consider this proposal a redevelopment. There is no vision in this proposal, no repurposing of existing infrastructure or incorporation of sustainable designs, all elements that we would like to see in an actual redevelopment designation request. The Council has been given the responsibility of balancing the protection of critical environmental resources in the Highlands with the smart growth of the region. The Regional Master Plan has provided the tools needed to balance these two main goals, and yet we watch as the Council uses these tools to sidestep the intents and purposes of the Highlands Act. We will support appropriate redevelopment projects in the Highlands, but we will not support expansion proposals incorrectly labeled as redevelopment projects such as this one. Thank you.
I just want to build on what Erica has said. For the record, this is Julia Summers. In your comments, which we got today when we arrived, there was a recognition that we have said this is not an innovative or sustainable application of the redevelopment standards in the RMP, but rather an excuse for an expansion in the preservation area. and the response is the comment is acknowledged. I think that response recognizes we have a point. And I would like to point to 700 Bartley Chester Road. We made exactly the same comments on that. So our request is that we come up with another term for this kind of redevelopment, because it really isn't redevelopment. You should be calling it something like a waiver for additional growth. The only project that we are aware of so far that truly could be called a redevelopment project that has come before you, and we had problems with that and we commented extensively, but it was a redevelopment project, is one that you, Mr. Chairman, are very familiar with, which is the Fenimore Jump. That truly was a redevelopment project. These are not redevelopment. These are expansion of use, and we shouldn't be calling them redevelopment. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Any other members of the public wish to be heard on this matter? Yes, sir.
My name is David Shope. Does anyone know how many people will be employed at this facility?
Just the answer is no. Mr. Shope, what's your
This the same building came up many years ago for an expansion of the parking lot. At that time, it employed about 200 people. The owner got so tired of being jerked around by the state, he picked up himself, his machinery, his 200 people, and he moved to Pennsylvania, where he's now very happy. And I would suspect when you, as this is a warehouse operation, if it has two dozen people in there, it will be a lot. So I would like to congratulate the state of New Jersey for basically losing 180 jobs at minimum to an adjoining state. Also, it was mentioned that the DEP does not issue a letter of interpretation until you get something done before it. My question to the DEP would be, why not? This is a perfect example of yet a step-by-step process equivalent to running the gauntlet line to get anything done in this state. I just heard that New Jersey's unemployment rate ticked down 0.1%. I just heard that today. That in itself is a miracle. And I would hope that you would approve this project simply because it's a useful use of this building, although not as useful as the former owner's use was as an employ 200 people, but at least it's something. It's better than having it sit there empty at a reduced rate on the tax rolls. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please approve this.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on this matter? Yes, sir.
Hi, Chairman Riley. My name is Richard Stein. I'm an attorney with the firm of Riley, Clark & Ryan in Sparta. I represent the applicant, 700 Bartley Chester Road. I first would like to thank Deputy Executive Director, and as you affectionately call them, the two Chris's, for their very prompt and efficient review of our application and their recommendation to you to approve the application, which I certainly hope you will follow their recommendation. To answer the gentleman's question, the number of employees when the project is complete would be about 20. And yes, it was a factory before, and there were many more employees there now. And they have moved, and that's in the past. We can only talk about the building now and what can be done with it to provide for sustainable economic development in the Highlands regions. We believe we presented a very good application for an adaptive reuse of a factory to a warehouse that will be a productive part of the Mount Olive community in the Highlands region. The building did sit empty for 2 years, so it's not just like somebody moved out and somebody moved in. It is difficult to find tenants. It is difficult to do development. We're taking a project here that we think has a lot of merit, and we would certainly request that Council favorably vote in favor of a redevelopment designation, as was pointed out, so we can do the next step and apply to DEP. I'm here, Mr. Post, who is the principal and member of 700 Bartley Chester Road, and a representative from Fierro Engineering. Our consulting engineers are here. as is our tenant on Common Carrier. So if there are council questions during your deliberation, we'd be very happy to have to answer them for you. Thank you very much.
Any other members of the public wish to be heard on this matter? Seeing none, we'll close the public portion. Any council members?
Mr. Dressler. Chairman, we've all sat on planning boards, and we view the applications here, I guess, with a planning board eye also. When I was going through this application, the first thing that I said to myself was, is this a redevelopment or is it an attempt to backdoor an increase in the impervious area of the parking lot? And I said to myself, I don't believe it to be a redevelopment. I believe it to be an increase, although backdoored, to try and get through this council. I'm going to be voting no on it for that reason.
Thank you. Any other council members?
Yes, sir.
Refresh my memory on where this additional runoff water ends up. Where's it going?
Chris?
Is it?
That was my question also. Explain the bioretention
system. Yeah. Is it going to bioretention?
Yes, it's going to it. Right now it's running in with a detention basin. Detention basin. And it's going to be converted to a bioretention basin that will perk down to where it is.
The Highlands Coalition has a good question about what's the difference between expansion and redevelopment, and I think we should keep that in mind. How would you respond to their saying that this is an expansion and not a redevelopment?
Just as I had indicated previously, that parking is a business model. It's a component of a business model. When you're doing commercial development, you must address parking. And this parking is for tractor trailer usage. They cannot safely get the tractor trailers in and out of this facility the way it was aligned for office and manufacturing. They worked very hard to minimize it. They worked very hard to reconfigure it so that the maximum amount of usage on that lot would be used. But it just wasn't designed for tractor trailers. The end use of this property has changed from office and manufacturing to a warehousing where you need to bring tractor and trailers in. So it wasn't designed for that. If the parking lot had originally been designed for warehouse and tractor trailing, it might have been configured a bit differently. So the adaptive reuse of any commercial building, if you went from mixed use, you know, went from residential or warehousing to mixed use or higher residential, everyone, if you're from a planning board lens, you must address the parking. Are the parking standards able to be met? Is that new use able to be fit in the space of the existing use? And parking is part of any model when it comes into that. So they were able to do the adaptive reuse of the building. And then they realized that the parking configuration was not working for them. It wasn't able to fit, so they brought it in. And by the time they got to us, they had evaluated the LOI. They had knew they had to upgrade the stormwater system, that we were going to ask them about that. And they minimized the parking lot. They worked very hard so that the impervious surface could fit and could reconfigure it so that they didn't have to go far beyond. They're going to replant with native species, and they're surrounded in a commercial existing development. Albeit there may be 20 jobs at this warehouse, but Givaudan down the road is also depending on Common Carrier to bring the products to market. So when we look at this project, we look at it in the comprehensiveness of regional planning. Where does it fit in the region? Is it able to do better than what was there before with the stormwater? Yes. Did we address all of the resources around it? And parking, whether we feel it is a good thing or not, it is a part of a business model. Any applicant that comes in front of a planning board must address the parking standards. Mm-hmm. I would say to you that the first thing that we do is say, are your parking standards, you know, sufficient? That we've talked to Mount Olive about the fact that we think they might be overly in size, that we don't need to go that far. So we always try to minimize what we can regarding any impervious surface. But you can't have a commercial building or any type of mixed-use building or lease, you know, residential building if you don't address parking. So you can't redevelop the building and not recognize the parking lot.
Okay, finally, if this council voted this down, this redevelopment, what would be the effect on the company and the business?
I think the question moving forward should be directed to the executive director, especially that question.
Yeah, we really don't know what the impact will be. We know it's been vacant for 2 years, but to assume the building would remain vacant, but I can't answer that. The owner would have to answer that. I don't have a crystal ball to know what would happen.
Well, I can tell you from experience on many years of zoning board and planning board that when someone comes in with an opportunity to redevelop or rebuild, take all what you like, an existing vacant building, especially one that's been vacant for more than a year or two, and the planning board really gets sticky with the vocabulary of redevelopment or expansion or whatever, and the business is really trying to improve that site to make it a useful site. If the answer is no, they go away. That's the simple answer. When a business comes in and wants to invest in a site, and if they get resistance, they simply go away. It's a history of New Jersey. If you look at our businesses, we're trying to turn that around in our municipality from previous years. You know, we went from a summer type municipality to a year-round, and when you try to encourage businesses, the investor and the bank will look at your previous behavior as planning or zoning, and based on that, they'll make decisions whether to invest money or lend money. And when it comes to people reaching in their pocket to spend it on a site, if they have negative stuff going on with either planning or zoning, they simply go away because it's passive lease resistance. That's the reality of what we're trying to deal with here. Whether it's, you know, what I'm looking at here is an existing site. I see stuff that was built in a vernal pool long before we had vernal pools. The world didn't come to an end. It's probably not the best thing to do, but it was done. Third point is that you're trying to take something that now is nothing and make it something. And I think that's a little bit basic, but at the end of the day, if the answer is, well, no, we have to go back and do this, the investor simply says, goodbye.
Mr. Semenzik, I'd also add that I think if you look at what traditionally are good planning principles, one would be that it fit the character of the neighborhood and that the surrounding properties would be conforming to the same type of use. I think it meets that test. I think it also, from what Mr. Kiefenk said before, is a building across the street of 300,000 to 400,000 feet. So that character of the area is quite clear that it's suited for warehouse and for development.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you on that. Whatever else is around there. The question we were just having here is, what's the effect of those big tractor trailers coming in and out of there? Does it make a big difference to the neighborhood?
I would say, yeah, that's a local issue for the Mount Olive Planning Board, and they, on September 22nd, heard this, and tonight, I understand they are adopting a resolution of approval for the redevelopment as we would hopefully approve.
You've also got a substantial reduction in demands on the resources. Like that. You're going down from 200 to 20 people. A lot less water being used, a lot less effluent. So, quite frankly, considering the the area that is being developed in, which is the free trade zone, and considering that I don't think it gives a fair representation of the area by just looking at this one little parcel again. The director brought up, right across the street is a very large development. All throughout this entire area are very large developments. They're very well maintained. But you're looking at a grassy area here that looks like it sits in isolation, and it doesn't. So I, quite frankly, don't have a lot of issue with this.
Ms. Carlicio?
Yes, I had a few things I wanted to ask about and comment on. First of all, I actually agree with Mr. Shope. I would like to see the LOI done now because I think, it was mapped originally. The applicants say that was not correct. I'd like to see it actually mapped now, and I think that would help us in order to make a decision.
They have to go to DEP for that after they leave here.
I realize that, but what I'm saying is I'd like to see that before we make a decision.
So we will not provide it. That's what we were just told.
Well, I think that we should ask DEP to provide it ahead.
Next.
Vernal pools. What did New Jersey DEP, the Endangered and Non-Game Species Program, say about the vernal pool there?
It's a certified vernal pool. We don't have metadata on the pool, but I was going to mention that absent our 1,000-foot buffer,
it would make the wetland an extraordinary value wetland, which would give a 150-foot buffer. But then, since it's in the Highlands Preservation Area, vernal pools are considered Highlands open waters, so we get a 300-foot buffer.
Well, in our, you know, under that that part of our of the original master plan, we are supposed to get a report, and we're supposed to have participation from the Endangered and Threatened Species Program.
That's true. In this case, since it's redevelopment, we felt we could, it's our a provision that we could waive that provision because it's a for another project, absolutely, but for this project, we felt as a redevelopment project that we could waive that.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think that we should follow what's in the regional master plan and require that that program participate and advise the council because they're the experts on vernal pools, not us. Also, I'm interested, there's a comment in the evaluation, in the determination review, that core habitat is not being impinged upon. How is that being defined, the core habitat?
That's in, it's, that came from the vernal pool technical report. There is, that's how we came up with the vernal pool buffer. So it, that's identified in the technical report. And typically the core habitat is within the first 500 feet of the vernal pool. And then we took that buffer based on data that I can't speak to because I don't have it all memorized. But we looked at where would be the best protection outside of that to maximize that. And that's how we came up with 1,000 feet.
Okay, because I mean, I remember, you know, when we developed that in the regional master plan, the concept was that you would look at the metadata for a vernal pool and look at the species that you're talking about and then define the core habitat based on what that species needs, because it's different. Some of them need more than others. We don't know what's living there, so I think we're making a guess about, again, without, you know, the experts advising us, we're making a guess about that core habitat based on a measuring stick that really was supposed to be refined once we took a look at a specific application that would impinge on an area. We also, remember, said that it could be expanded, it might be greater. Not, so that's written into the plan, and that's supposed to be on a, you know, site-by-site basis. So I think we've really fallen down on that end, and I don't feel that I'm satisfied that the vernal pool is being protected the way the regional master plan says it, that it should be. Also, there's supposed to be a critical habitat conservation and management plan associated with this. Do we get out of having to do that because this is not considered to be core habitat?
No, that's going to be done for all of Mount Olive, and this will be a component of it. So the critical habitat plan that comes along with the plan conformance process will be town-wide for Mount Olive, and they've been provided that as part of their implementation plan and schedule, and it will recognize all of the habitat resources. And we are actually working very hard to develop the details for that critical habitat plan and are intending to come out pretty soon and present to the council, working with Jean and Margaret, an RFP to assist in the development of that.
That's great. That's really great. I think, however, that I would like to see that plan again before we start moving ahead. Unfortunately, in a lot of these applications, we're putting the cart before the horse. We don't have the information we need about whether or not the species there are going to be properly protected according to a plan, and we have to vote now on this application. The other thing, this next item, I'd just like to point out related to vernal pool. If you look at the picture, and I agree, it's a little hard to see that, you know, the entire area. But just looking at the aerials that we were provided, it looks like there could very well be connectivity through open vegetated areas to the vernal pool. So I think, you know, the standard, which was well discussed when we developed the regional master plan, was that there had to be a significant, insurmountable, and permanent barrier. And I don't know that we have met that here, because just looking visually, it looks as if there could be connectivity. And one of the, you know, we know that these species cross roads. We know that, you know, vernal pools actually exist in areas where there is commercial development if you allow that connectivity to remain. So I don't think that we should assume that it's not. Again, we need the experts to advise us on this. The second item is the karst features and the carbonate rock. I'm just curious who reviewed the borings on this.
Mark, do you want to speak to that issue?
Mark Venisek for Aero Engineering. And we provided soil logs as part of our stormwater management report to the Mount Olive Township Planning Board.
So you reviewed the borings, the results of the soil logs?
They were soil logs done for the stormwater management system, correct.
Okay, it said in the report there were borings taken to look at whether or not there was any karst conditions. Are you familiar with the results of that?
We provided soil test pits to a depth of about 10 feet. The previous engineer for the original site did some borings. I did not review those.
So we don't know whether or not there are karst conditions, as is stated in this report here. And I think, you know, this was a very important feature because carbonate rock is vulnerable to negative changes if you have flows that increase the rate or the quantity, or you have changes in quality of the runoff to the carbonate rock. And of course, the concern is not only pollution but also stability.
Well, a karst feature is essentially a sinkhole, and
we
did not see any evidence of that on site.
And do you know where these borings were done? Were they done just where they're going to be put in the parking lot? Were they done where the current activity, parking lot and buildings are located, and impervious cover is located?
Our office did two borings directly under the parking lot, or two soil test pits, and two in the detention basin to a depth of about 10 feet.
In those two, you didn't see anything in terms of sinkholes or karst conditions?
We did not hit any bedrock. Typically in this area, there's significant overburden, which means that there's a lot of soil on top of the bedrock. And, you know, at the depth that we went to, we did not hit any.
Well, thank you very much. I feel that we should have an engineer look at the borings that were done and report to this board about karst conditions before we move ahead on this. Also, I have a question about, what it says that there were adequate measures that are going to be taken to avoid the surface flows that would cause changes. Do you know what those measures are? I mean, I know stormwater, the bioretention facility is one, but what else is being done?
The parking lot is new extension is going to be curved like it is now, so the water is going to be captured with drainage inlets and directed to the existing basin, which has been there for 20 years or so. The volume is going to be expanded slightly, and to account for the additional impervious, which I just want to point out is not a significant amount. It's about 6/10 of an acre. So it's a pretty small amount compared to the site. And the bioretention basin is essentially a sandy bottom that will infiltrate stormwater. So right now there's no recharge happening on the site, and we'll provide that.
Will there be drains in the parking lot?
Storm drains, correct.
And they'll connect also to the bio, and this existing detention basin you're talking about is the one that will be converted fully to bioretention.
Correct. So it'll actually treat the whole site, the existing site also, as well as the new development. Mm-hmm. And I'll just point out that there's a septic system also on site that's infiltrating, the wastewater, and that's functioning fine.
Okay, thank you. The next issue I wanted to ask about is this, the review of the steep slope aspects, and it's really great that the detention basin is going to be converted to bioretention. You can see in the picture how big that is, and it has that cement impervious bottom, which I assume is going to be removed.
Correct.
However, it does say, that because these steep slopes, the only steep slopes on the property, are man-made, that they're really not a concern. But, of course, the concern is not only to preserve the steep slope, but to make sure there's no erosion or sedimentation. What about the steep slopes in the detention basin? Is that going to be changed when you do the bioretention?
The slope is going to remain the same, but they'll just be pushed back to make the basin slightly wider. And we will be protecting them from erosion at the where the pipe goes into the basin. We'll have stone riprap to reduce the energy of the stormwater.
And sorry, I just have a few more things. And the 80% removal of TSS, that would be great. But what does this bioretention system do in terms of hydrocarbons and oil and gas? Because as we know. And this is, from technical reports out of Pennsylvania, out of New Jersey as well as Pennsylvania, New Jersey itself in their stormwater
BNP manual, they talk about parking lots can be point sources of pollution related to hydrocarbons. Now, is this bioretention facility going to be able to deal with that, or how are you going to address oil, grease, gas, hydrocarbons that are that run off from the new parking area?
It does deal with it, and you know, I don't have an exact number. It's designed in accordance with DEP standards, which is to provide 80% TSS removal. I believe the DEP has simplified the pollutant removal criteria by only looking at TSS removal. And, you know, a lot of those pollutants get stuck to the TSS, which is their total suspended solids. So by meeting that, you're essentially meeting the other pollutant removal criteria.
And certainly that's true. And, you know, I did serve myself on New Jersey BNP committee for 5 years in developing those regulations. But one of the issues is that there are pollutants from parking lots that are not caught in your TSS. And often they, you know, a facility will put in a manufactured device to separate out the oil and grease and these hydrocarbons, which, you know, we're locating this on a wellhead protection area, and also it says it drains to the Morris Canal. So this is a very important issue in terms of water quality to me. So have you looked at this, and is there a possibility that you would be providing that kind of manufactured device in order to address this potential pollution problem?
You're going through literally every aspect, every bullet point.
This is our only opportunity to do it. If we have work sessions where we could go through these in great detail, I'd be very happy to do it.
That is information for a week.
Pardon me?
I've had this information since Friday.
What are you talking about? This is the first time I've had a chance to speak with the applicant.
The information here, some of these questions could have been directed towards our executive director to have answers set aside for you. I mean,
I'd like to do it at the meeting. This is why we're here, to address this application. So I'm sorry, sir, but I do have more questions, and it's related to this application, and we have the people here to answer the questions.
Regardless of how long it goes, we will be voting on it this evening. Please continue.
Well, I don't think I should feel like I should, you know, not ask my questions. I think I'm a member of this council, and
I
have a right to do that.
You've been talking for the last 10 minutes. So I don't think.
Well, I'm sorry it's taking a long time. This is a very important issue. Redevelopment in the preservation area of the Highlands, the best of the best, is a very important issue. We are here to protect the Highlands as well as to support good development.
And we're supposed to utilize the tools that are given us, including our staff.
And that's what I'm at, and that's what why I'm asking these questions here. Mr. File can answer. The applicant seems to know a lot more than
our professionals have asked many of these
Mr. File does, or our staff does. So I appreciate the opportunity to have these answers. The flood-prone area. This is really a question, really, for our staff. Is that mapped? I didn't see a map. It's checked that it's flood-prone. Does it infringe into the riparian area? And is the buffer going to be maintained? How is this going to work?
The wetland and stream complex that Mark's firm delineated, the very eastern strip of the eastern boundary, is our mapping shows as flood-prone area, one of the aspects of riparian area.
So will this infringe into
the
riparian area?
No, it does
but
not.
But then how can it be flood-prone?
It's RGIS data maps it as flood-prone area, but it's not against the most eastern edge of the property. It does, the development, proposed development does not encroach into that flood-prone area.
Okay, thank you. The wellhead protection area, this is a tier two area. You know, that means in 5 years, pollutants are expected to reach that tier. I'm wondering, you know, about the oil, gas, grease, the BTEX, the benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylene that we know are emitted by parking lots, and how are we going to address that and still satisfy the requirements in the regional master plan about protecting aquifers and surface waters, and even some of the policies that I think apply here and objectives were not checked under that section, which I think we need to address this. And if you could please enlighten us.
All good questions. The wellhead protection area data that we have, that we're following, has a certain amount of uses for the potential contaminant sources, the majors and the minors. And
This is not specifically listed as a major or a minor pollutant in that, but we have all gone out of our way, and the RMP, as you recognize, to do the Tier 1, the Tier 2, and the Tier 3, which is the 2-year, the 5-year, and I think the 12-year time frame for contaminants. And that's based on the potential of a spill or some contaminant entering the groundwater and traveling to the potential wellhead. So a Tier 2 has a 5-year travel time. And we use the list of uses that are in there as the potential and look at the actual containment operation contingency of the plan to address this. And the parking lot with its bioretention basin and the measures that they put in place should be recognized as being a containment system for the runoff from that lot.
Was there any modeling done of, you know, the pollutants from this new use?
No, the modeling was for the stormwater program, the design of their stormwater retention. That was done. We did not do an on-site modeling program. We haven't done that for any of them thus far.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. There was a mention here of trucks being parked there. I saw that in there. Do we have any idea how many trucks? Are they going to be sitting there a long time? Is this basically going to be a parking lot? Is it 10 trucks, 50 trucks? Any idea? Because the reason I'm asking is there is a threshold issue here. If you have a lot of trucks sitting there a lot of the time, what happens, particularly in some of the areas where we have a lot of truck traffic coming in and out, like a rest area, for instance, there is a lot of material that ends up just from these trucks sitting and small leaks and that kind of thing adding up cumulatively over time.
They can answer the timing of the trucks on site, but it was meant to get egress and ingress to the site to actually bring the goods out of the site. I don't know how long they'll be on site. That would be something specific that they could answer.
Will there be any limits at all?
The extension is for ingress and egress,
and also
it's a
reconfiguration of this parking lot to allow tractor trailers to come in and out of the parking lot. And it may be that they are stored on there for some time, but it wasn't meant to be a rest stop or an area that was going to be a tractor trailer permanent lot for maintenance or facilities.
Not a storage type trailer.
Right.
To answer the question, it's the trailers, not the tractor and the trailer. It's just the trailer that's going to be parked there. Tractors will come in and out, pick them up, take them in, take them out. The applicant and the tenant are looking to start out with 10 and expand that to 20. If you saw our plan, we actually phased it into two parts. There's the first part and the second part. The second part may never be built, as far as we know, but we wanted to have it get one approval and not have to do this two times if that proved to be the case. But it's just trailers that will be parked there, not the entire rig.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Can I ask something related to that?
Yeah.
Regarding your expert, do you feel that there's an increase or a decrease in the amount of pollutants that might be released into the parking lot as a result of the change of use?
I think probably a decrease. You can see all the car parking spaces on the side. They used to be pretty much full for the previous use, and now I believe there's about 5 to 10 cars parked there. So I think a pretty drastic decrease in pollutants.
Including the tractors coming in and out.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
We also see in the application there's a discussion that grass, it's just grass now. And I just would like to point out that, grass doesn't have motor vehicle traffic. So this is different than grass. And I appreciate that, compacted soil does act, as if it's almost impervious, particularly if it's maintained like most turf is. But still, it can be renovated and to a natural condition. And it doesn't have traffic on it. So it's not like this is, this is not de minimis. This is a change that's important. In terms of the land use capability section of the review report, how is the policy 6F3 met specifically? You're talking here about the on the land use capability section. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I'm going to go away to that so I can read it with you. To ensure that 6F3, is that page 14?
to ensure that development activities within the existing community zone are subject to standards and criteria which ensure that development and redevelopment incorporate smart growth principles and do not adversely affect natural resources.
It's that last phrase, do not adversely affect
right.
natural resources.
I think the concern is valid in that any time we disturb something from either be a grass or a non-man-made influence to man-made, we have done something. And that's why we have a redevelopment program, and that's why the redevelopment program recognizes that there are thresholds that you have to go through. You have to have been in existing development. You had to be 70% impervious surface, and we allow you to expand within a certain amount within that area. That expansion will always be minimized in its natural resource impacts. We evaluate those. But smart growth says go where your footprint was already disturbed. Disturb as least as you can when you move forward and make sure that it supports the economic development, the quality of life in the community, and doesn't allow for further infringement of natural resources. So when we looked at this site and we pull up and we look at it from a regional planning perspective, this is an existing general industrial zone in the preservation area that sat vacant for 2 years. It already lost opportunity and employment. It is looking for a way to dovetail to another product company that is in the preservation area, that is in the foreign trade zone, the international trade zone. So it meets the smart growth component in that it looked at two redevelopment opportunities to keep a company staying in the area. It helps support Mount Olive in its initiative to address doing better in its existing footprint where it's already gone and staying in the zoning that was in place and the existing community zone. So on many levels, it recognizes smart growth. And when you talk about adversely impacting natural resources, when we do redevelopment, when we go to places where man hasn't gone before, we are going to affect them, but we're going to minimize them, and we're going to make sure that those effects don't have a regional impact and do not deter the actual functioning of the ecosystem for in which the subwatershed or the forest are affected. And that's what we looked at here. And we were able to say that these 27,000 square feet of additional pervious with the bioretention basin and the increased design and the changes in parking and runoff and the ability of that site to address its concerns regarding all of those was sufficient, and it does meet the standards of the RMP, and it does meet redevelopment.
Thank you. I mean, I think you certainly made your case for the development and redevelopment smart growth principles part as far as the affecting the natural resources. I'm not going to be able to support this application because I see the wellhead zone as being vulnerable to pollution from the parking lot. I see the vernal pool being encroached upon, and we have absolutely no idea whether or not the statements made in the report are actually true, as we did not consult experts. And also, I don't see the specific low-impact development policies that are practices that are being put in place here. And I'll just give an example of what I would expect out of the Highlands. You'd be using pervious pavement with an underdrain system that captures all pollution, all runoff, puts it through a manufactured treatment system into holding tanks that have alarms that are metered so we know what's going on there and keeps it out of the aquifer and out of the Morris Canal. And then also would have mixed vegetation, not just aesthetically pleasing trees, in order to allow that connectivity to the vernal pool to remain in place. And that's the kind of visionary type of redevelopment that I think we should be doing here. And I don't see that in this application. One last comment is on the air. I don't imagine that there was any modeling done on the air, but there was a conclusion reached that there was only going to be temporary, localized, and insignificant air emissions. And I guess that's based on how much truck traffic is expected in and out, but I think it would be really good to see that level of analysis when we reach such a bold conclusion. In fact, it could be measurable and significant. We just don't have any data to tell us otherwise.
I do know that Mount Olive has a no idling ordinance, and they put all that in place. So they're managing their where trucks are parked throughout local ordinances, and have put that in place.
Thank you, Mr. Alston.
Yeah, I want to compliment both of you. I think this is probably the best redevelopment application we've ever had presented to us in terms of staff preparedness and explanation. I appreciate it. And I thought it was interesting that we've come full circle. And Carl, you asked early on in the meeting, how do we as a council fulfill the mission that the governor has put before us, or the goal of compensating landowners? And I think there's a fourth component. You mentioned three, and I think the fourth component is maintaining existing viable businesses. Here we have an opportunity to support a business that's already in place, a building that's already in place, which supports another business which we approved a redevelopment plan for several years ago, which manufactures fragrances and perfumes, if my memory serves me correctly. So by simply maintaining the economic viability of an existing business, we keep them here, they're paying taxes, they're employing people, and there's economic activity, which is also one of the goals of the regional master plan. I think that I probably know this area better than anybody here because it's just down the road and I've been here my whole life. You need to zoom out a little bit to understand that just to the east is a construction yard, and just east of that is Route 206. This thing's only a tenth of a mile off of Route 206. You go north, and there's a paint factory. It's the Benjamin Moore Research Facility, where they do all the research to develop new pigments and new colors and everything for the Benjamin Moore that we put on our houses. Go to the south, and there's a 20-acre warehouse for Toys R Us. You talk about truck traffic, there's hundreds of trucks in and out every day. You go to the west, and there's an abandoned school bus company, which you can see in the corner of the picture. And also to the west is an active rail spur, and what more appropriate development than a warehouse with a rail spur right next to it in case they ever wanted to start accepting freight or shipping freight by rail. Well, they put a little siding right in, and you've got an active rail spur being better utilized, because it is utilized by Toys R Us right now. So the character of the existing area certainly suggests that this warehouse use is completely compatible. We're talking about just over a half an acre of new impervious coverage is all on a site that has almost 20 acres of area. And I think that when you take into consideration all these factors, this is one of the easiest ones we've ever had come before us. And so the amount of debate surprises me because this is straightforward as straightforward gets as far as redevelopment for this Highlands Council. And I think it is important to clarify in terms of where the water goes. This is the Raritan. The Morris Canal is on the other side of the mountain, so short of a whole bunch of inclined planes and
a whole
bunch...
It says Morris Canal in here.
Well, they're dead wrong. It goes to the Raritan.
That's what it says in the application. So we have another piece of wrong information in the
Morris Canal is empty anyway. So.
Well, that...
Not there.
Most of it is. I can show you lots of pieces that are dead empty. And the Morris Canal does not go through there. I'm voting in favor of this. This is a simple one, and I'd be shocked. I think it's completely wrong to vote against it. This is the best thing we can do to preserve economic viability. If this thing goes out, all they're going to do is come before us and say, with a hardship case for TDR, right? I mean, so it's either give them a half an acre of impervious coverage to park tractor-trailers on, and let them employ people and pay taxes, or let them come to us as a bankrupt entity and with TDR hardship so that they can get money to be bought out so the thing will sit there empty.
Initially, I wrestled with this particular application. You know, is it an expansion or is it redevelopment and so on? And I'm of the opinion, you know, this particular application is going to provide jobs. And I believe our staff did a yeoman's job in preparing the response to the public comments, specifically the last paragraph of page one. Excellent job. I mean, I read that and I'm saying, Jim, my goodness, it's easy, because the last sentence is, redevelopment in the Highlands is a process used to rebuild, restore, or enhance a previously developed area. Simple. So I agree, and I'm going to vote in favor of this particular application.
Mr. Haltewood.
I took note of the judge's comment on redevelopment, and I also thought about that, and I've been in this business for 35 years, and I think most people have this impression that redevelopment is this massive project where things come in and, oh, we have this giant factory, and let's turn it into condos or whatever. But really, you know, this is the shades of gray here. I'm not sure there's 50 shades of gray, but there's shades of gray here. And we'll take one or two. Redevelopment, as I look at it, and I'm just one guy out of the whole crew,
is where you have development that's required to meet an adaptive reuse. You have a piece of property that's obsolete, as this is, and manufacturing like this in New Jersey is indeed an obsolete facility. The hope of tracing something like that back into that building is practically zero. So we have to look at adaptive reuses. Now, there's limited availability. Warehousing is one that has come surfaced. If we want to turn into condos, we'd be here talking about more parking spaces even than that. So, you know, in my opinion, this does fall in on the shade of gray of redevelopment. This really is redevelopment. That has to be done in order to make that property useful, and it's repurposed, and it's repurposing the environment. So, you know, I'm happy there. Manufacturing is a very slippery slope in New Jersey. And again, if Givaudan can't get warehousing space in a convenient place, in an economically viable manner, putting that other in jeopardy, and I'm sure that we don't, I don't care to be any part of that. In the event that this is denied, what's the probability that this warehouse would be built on a greenfield? And then this would be here rotting, and we would lose greenfield. So, I add it all up in my head, I think that, yes, the sacrifices we're making. And I think that what they're doing is quite clean. If they stop mowing the lawn along that east edge and let it reconnect into that semi-forested or wild area to the north and connect down in through their pieces there, it would help even more. But I think what they really need to do is take a look at that facility to the east.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other members?
Visit door.
I won't take
door.
Too much time.
I think Tracy hit on a lot of issues, and I think she hit on the issues that are in lock and step with the way the Act is written. This, under any circumstance, in any municipality, would not reach the level under the state of New Jersey's requirements for an area to be declared an area of redevelopment. There's just no way it's going to meet those standards to deal with redevelopment every day. So on the record, this is not a redevelopment site. It's an expansion of the parking lot. That's what it is. Now, saying that doesn't mean that I'm for or against the project. You got to weigh all the factors in making that decision. And I think what I got from some of the questions that were asked is, did we get enough sustainability in this project to warrant a yes vote for this expansion of this parking lot? So let me start with the buffer. So we're going to extend as about half an acre, correct? Kurt?
Yes.
About half an acre. So when that gets extended, what's the buffer? Who can answer that question? You talked about natural species.
Buffer to the pool, the buffer to
the property line. Buffer to the property line after this expansion of the parking lot. What's the buffer?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Yeah. You mentioned about planting natural species and things like that, right? Right. Who's going to do that?
Who's going to do the plantings on the site? The applicant will do the plantings on the site in accordance with their planting plan once they have reconfigured the parking lot area. And they've selected natural plantings to do that, to create that buffer.
Okay. Who in your office, Mr. Director, signs off on saying that is an improvement to the quality of sustainability, because obviously trees and plantings is part of sustainability. So who makes that judgment that they have, because they're looking for an expansion of the redevelopment under this law, they're going to now plant natural species and make this great buffer for the pool. Who determines that?
Well, we'll be working on that and checking that, and we'll also be working with the municipality, with Mount Olive, to make sure that they're performing.
And we'll be working with the DEP during their HPA process to look at the very specific plans.
It still has these DEP approval. Okay, so that's all going to be done, but we don't get to see what actually...
They have submitted plans to us. We have looked at blue line plans of this, of where they're going and what the plantings are and how far they're going to go and where they intend to do the plantings. That was submitted as part of the application. They can be finalized and be addressed as it moves forward.
Okay. All right, as long as that somebody's on top of... Mm-hmm. Of that part, because that is part of sustainability, which is part of the reason why you come in here saying that you can come under this part of redevelopment because it's sustainable
it's reuse or different reasons. But I don't see the reuse, other than you're adding some natural species that probably weren't there prior to this.
Yeah, there's trees there right now and a lawn. That's all that's there.
Right. So it's not a lot. It's not a lot. So there's going to be more when this is done, correct?
There's going to be another half acre of impervious surface, a stormwater bioretention.
Is there going to be more natural species and plantings than there are now?
No. There'll be a different stormwater basin. Yeah.
No. Because you just answered no, and they're saying yes. They understood what you're saying.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about measuring the area where the parking lot is expanding, I'm talking, they're going to go a half acre. In that half acre, there is going to be impervious surface in that area. Right. So
they're going to add?
Yes, beyond that. Yes, onto the site. Yes, I'm sorry, I thought you meant in that half acre.
Okay. How much are they adding? Does it come to a level that you can say that the area is benefiting environmentally by what they're planting?
From what we saw, yes. From the application, yes. And from the bioretention basin, yes.
So in your opinion, you're on the record, you're saying that what they're planting and how much they're planting benefits the surrounding area, which is other businesses and the area in general, adds to the environmental footprint for the exchange of carbon and air.
Based on the site conditions, yes.
Okay. That's positive. Mm-hmm. So that's one element. The second element would be the stormwater management. That would be another element. And the last element would be that you do hire people, and that's economics, and that's the three questions that you have to ask as far as sustainability. So you're adding to the planet, you're adding people into employment, and you're taking a property that's not in use, and you're putting it in better use or less intensive use than what was prior. Are we all in agreement that it's a less intense use? Is the professionalism to less intense use than what was prior to it?
Yes.
Okay, so that meets those, to my opinion, that meets that criteria. What it does, the only question I have is what was brought up early is precedent setting. If you say this meets the criteria of redevelopment because of a 70% coverage, what are we saying to the next applicant that comes in that's not in such, that has 20 acres curtain around it, but has 70% coverage, and they use this argument, well, you gave it to this guy, and all I did was stormwater, hired 20 people, and I added some plants. Does that meet the criteria?
We've done it many times already.
Each one stands on
it. I would say it's case by case. Everyone is case by case. None of them, all of the resources are unique based on our mapping. The site conditions are case by case.
Okay.
And there isn't one that we say that, you know, the Givaudan that they're supporting was a whole different application when it came in.
Okay. The only other, couple other things I have is some of the language that's in the report, and one of them Tracy brought up, which has to do with the carts, that it actually does say, during the pre-application, property over time indicated that there are no carts features on the property. We really didn't get a solid answer on that. Can we put, are we allowed to put a condition that we at least get the answer to that question? We can approve with a condition. We're allowed to get, put conditions on approvals, correct?
Well, yeah, there already are conditions.
Well, can we put that add that condition for approval once approved that we get the report?
The condition of approval?
Yes. On the question that Tracy asked, that there really was no testing for that, and I don't think that's that hard to do, and it won't be that costly.
Right now, happen. The condition is they must confirm no car features.
Yes.
Okay.
But in the report, it says they kind of are leading that the applicant indicated the borings conducted throughout. Over time, there are no car features on this property. It's kind of misleading.
I think our professional staff answered that by making that one of the conditions.
Well,
okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we will get that report.
Yes, we can get that. Well, now, we're going to be part of the process.
I suppose there are car conditions. Then what?
Well, then
let's,
have to
let's go back to this question. What is a karst condition? Somebody said sinkhole?
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be the easiest way? All right,
that's
suppose,
the easiest way to understand.
Suppose karst. That there is a karst condition. What do we do then? I'm just curious. Engineering-wise, I don't know. What do we do then?
The project would have to be re-engineered.
It would have to be addressed and re-engineered. And that happens. We've had projects that we've been aware of where they've hit a sinkhole. I think it was Raymore and Flanagan.
Okay, so if there's a karst condition, then this project will go default.
Okay, it has to get re-engineered. Right. It
so
has
that is
to
critical that we have that answer.
Right, so we'll have to add that as a condition of our approval.
That's fine.
That's what I'm saying.
applicant, so I just asked.
Right, right. I'm saying we'll add that if you, the council agrees to that, we'll add that as a condition of approval.
Does the council agree to that condition? I thought you said it was.
Right now they have confirmed no harsh features. That's not written in the report as that, yeah.
And it's not, and it's, like not, a, it, it's not a condition, correct?
No.
And that's what I was trying to say, Mr. Chairman. It's not a condition. It needs to be a condition.
And at the end of the of both documents, we recommend approval with conditions. There's three in there now. Mm-hmm. We can add that as a fourth condition.
What that,
on that last page.
I would like to get the board to go along with that. I don't think that's unreasonable, because I don't think they're going to want to build over a sinkhole anyway, or cave over a sinkhole.
Well, that's the thing. The engineers, for their own benefit, don't want to build on a
sinkhole.
Listen,
I've seen sinkholes. I've seen engineers approve things that come back a year later and go, how did they ever approve that? So it could happen. So we really need to get back.
On the last page of the report, that's where the three conditions are right now, just for clarification.
Yes. So we need to add that one more. Uh-huh. That would be great if we could get the board to go along with that. Like I said, I think it meets the criteria of a light side of sustainability. I don't think it meets the requirement of redevelopment under the definition of redevelopment. However, I do believe this will probably go case-by-case basis. If we can get that condition in and we have strong oversight on species planting and trees, that benefit that is an increase to what is there now,
let's propose.
Then I would be in support.
I just want to clarify for you, Chairman Norton. We do not identify redevelopment in accordance with the local housing and redevelopment law. We have our own in the RP, and it doesn't need to meet that threshold.
I think the big question was, in layman's terms, let's look at it. It's an expansion of a parking lot. Any expansion in any part of the, would you agree or disagree, if you're going to take a half acre of land and you're going to pave it, you would think that any engineer or any applicant that would go to any, in front of any board would put storm water management, correct?
It's an extension of a parking lot related to an adaptive reuse of a building. They wouldn't be asking about this parking lot if they didn't change that building from one use to another.
All right. We'll say.
I want to be clear on one thing. You asked for oversight of the plantings.
Yes.
I think there's several menus. I think it's better stipulated that the plantings be similar to what has been approved by this board, so there's at least a minimum, because it can expand. It can do. We shouldn't have three bodies walking in there, the municipality, DEP, and the Highlands Council going in and say, no, I want it there. The other one comes in, no there, no there. I think substantially, if we're in a grants, there should be one body that oversees that.
Okay, but we have a lot of that.
A point, Mr. Chairman, is that the local planning board has approved this with their conditions.
Correct.
And we have to defer to what their action has been as well. So I would hate to see us duplicate that in
which direction. Which is the same plan, as I just heard.
We have, unless I'm wrong, Mr. Chairman, I want to get clarification from the attorney. We have every right of this commission to ask for plantings and species and trees, and we're not subject to the local planning boards. And I'm going to give you an example. The local planning board where I live, years before I was elected, approved a landscape plan for a pretty large development, and every tree of that development is dead. So it's crucial for environmentally wise to meet the criteria of sustainability, that this is an important factor.
I did not disagree with that.
No, but I think the director kind of leaned towards the...
No, I don't disagree with that.
So then how do we do that? How do we put that
in? We have a plan now that our professionals agree is sufficient and substantial, which is also the same plan that's been given to the planning board. So that's why I said, if our condition is substantially comparable to the plan that was submitted to us, that's... The municipality would need to follow that guideline as well. But again, we don't want the three agencies out there. Do you want to impact
no.
the developer to that degree that he has to move a tree a day?
No, but I would like to know what's being planted.
They have a planting list that has to be provided on all of their plans.
Do I have it in my packet?
No, you don't have it in your
then
packet.
Then how would I know?
You wouldn't know. You wouldn't know. I will say this, that the technical reports for the regional master plan identify plant species that are appropriate to be planted in the Highlands that are non-invasive
species.
We've provided people with that information.
Part of environmental in sustainability, you're asking for approval, is plantings. That's part of the environmental issue of sustainability. So you're asking me to support and vote on something that may or may not be, I would be okay with as far as some experience I have in that side of redevelopment.
There's many dozens of points within this thing that we're taking to worry about professionals, not besides plantings.
Okay. How many redevelopment projects have this board done?
That's not the question. The comment was is that we rely on our professionals on many points, not just plantings.
Okay. That's a good point. Who on our staff is an arborist?
Well, you have Terry Benscoter is a terrestrial ecologist, and she's very good with trees, and she inspects all the plants to make sure they're native. And again, we don't go away after you guys say yes, if you say yes today. We go down to DEP. We're at their meetings with them. We look at the plans with them.
Can I get a copy of what they proposed to be planted?
The site plant? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's public record. Come down and see me anytime you want.
You can supply me. It's not a hard request, Chairman.
I'd like to see it, too. Thank you.
Great. Any other comments? Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief. I'm going to speak as a former planning board. I will. I'm going to speak first as a former planning board member. I look at this project that I see. This would be absolutely great for this business. It fits in with the area. I think our staff has done a great job with protecting the environment. But I'm not a planning board member. I'm a member of the Highlands Council, and I think that we are stretching this label of redevelopment.
Is that it?
That's it.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Thank you. Just two quick points.
Thank you.
Number one, the business that was here before was a factory, a manufacturing establishment. All right. Manufacturing factory would have had to have gotten the goods out of that location by some vehicle. Do we know whether tractor trailers took that material out at that point?
I can tell you they did. There was the manufactured product that they carried was a very bulky, large, rolled product. And yes, they used tractor trailers. I know the owner of the business, and I know the business.
Right. So tractor trailers were utilized on this property at one point in time. We've gone from 200 employees down to 20 employees. Was there, and I guess I've got a problem with the word reconfiguration. It's not a reconfiguration, it's an expansion. Was any discussion take place as to a give back of portions of the parking lot that would not be utilized to buy down to 3% that's being put into effect now? And if not, why not?
Your point is valid regarding tractor trailers came in. They did come in to it before. The way they will enter and leave now and the storage of those trailers on site will be a different approach for how they do this business, as I understand it. And the applicant can speak more to that. So they do need to, they'll come in, but they'll move about in a different way in order for them to do the work that they need to do. As far as the 3% goes, they couldn't get, they hit the 70% of the criteria of impervious surface to come in. They tried to come in through an exemption for 125%, which would have given them an exempt status, and they would have not been sitting here today. But they didn't work, and that wasn't what didn't meet their demands.
But so were there any portions of this parking lot that could have been given back, taken the impervious area away, and created additional landscaping?
I think that's a valid question. They were not able to do that based on this, so they would not have even been able.
Right, they weren't able to do it, or they didn't.
I believe that the configuration that they had, and they can speak to the design of it, meant that they had, this was the way they had to go bigger. I think they tried to avoid going any bigger because and going over that 125%. But this was what they needed for their business model. This is what was required for them to keep that business going. And they tried to do it within an exemption four, staying within 125% of the existing building and coming under an exemption. They weren't able to meet that threshold. Whichever way they could get there, they had to go the redevelopment route in accordance with the preservation area rules and the RMP because they triggered that much impervious surface based on their design. And I believe that they did an analysis they presented to us that they tried to do it the other way, and they couldn't do it the way. This is what they need.
I'd like to point out, the applicant, I'm sure, isn't doing this for fun and giggles, so it's
put a great deal of money and expense into this and aggravation, so I would tend to believe that it's for a reason, it's a rationale. If there was another way to go,
they
moving the trucks to a different
yeah.
park somewhere else, it'd be a whole lot cheaper and a whole lot less aggravating.
What I'm saying, Chairman, is that, and I don't want to beat this to death, but what I'm saying is that there have to be other areas of the parking lot that are not being utilized. That 200 area parking area, could any of that been given back to compensate for the 3% that's given to them now? A trade walk, please.
I understand what you're saying.
I did not see that in what was presented. I'm sure they did an evaluation. They had no choice but to do this. This was their business model. This is what they needed to do. It met their safety standards. It met their business model. And we had talked to them first about doing something that would have been a lesser threshold and gave them that option so that they would not be coming through this process and taking the DEP and trying to work with them. And they decided that this is what they needed, and we'll move forward on it.
Any other comments from council members? Seeing none at this point in time.
I agree, Chris.
Chris and Chris, before you step away, a lot of comments made. I don't think anybody meant to imply that your work standards were insufficient in any such way. In fact, I'm quite impressed.
All good questions, and this is what we should be doing.
Quite impressed with your answers and your oversight on this project.
Thanks.
Thank you.
At this point in time,
yes, sir.
I was looking for
the answer. Oh, once you're done, I'm already on the floor. It's roll call.
Roll call.
Councilmember Alstead?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
No.
Councilmember Daugherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler?
No.
Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Aye.
Councilmember Mangucci?
Yes.
Councilmember Richdow?
No.
Councilmember Sevetich?
Yes.
Councilmember Tifank?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton?
Yes.
Chairman Riley?
Yes. Resolution passes 11-3.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good luck. I think the next few resolutions will go much faster.
Not exactly stepping out on a limb here.
Next up, consideration of resolution approval of water use and conservation grant for Sparta Township, Sussex County.
Bob? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, I think the our Director of Planning and Science has had an opportunity to take a breath and is back up. This is a request for a grant of $50,000 to develop a water use and conservation plan for Sparta Township, particularly in the White Deer Plaza area. And I will turn it over to Chris. And as per our conversation earlier, Mr. Chairman, I have to exercise my option to leave a little early. Thank you. And I'm turning it over to Deputy Director Margaret Nordstrom, who is far more informed than I. So she answer anything you wish. Answer anything you wish. She's ready.
Thank you, Mr. Powell. Good luck.
Thank you, Council. This is a resolution to assist the Township of Sparta with a water use and conservation management plan. This water use and conservation management plan was identified as part of their petition and their Highlands implementation plan and schedule. When that petition was approved on September 15th, 2011, and at the time we recognized that the township was interested in decommissioning the White Deer Plaza sewage treatment plant. It's an antiquated plant, and it would be cost prohibitive and actually improve the environment if they could actually bring it online to the Sussex County MUA. And so we talked about that at that time, but we weren't sure what the scope of that project would be, and we moved forward. So it now has to be determined, that was on that approval, has now been determined. And we spoke with the town, we met with them, and we are evaluating up to 3 HUFs of 14 watersheds. They've been identified in the resolution, and we are going to work with them to develop the scope of work. And we're going to assist them with the decommissioning of this antiquated plant and bring it online to a higher treatment plant with the Sussex County MUA.
Before we go any further, can I get a motion on this resolution? So moved.
I'll make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
A motion. We have a second for Mr. Vizioli. At this point in time, council members have any questions? Before I open to the public?
Was that one of the builder specials, the package plans?
It is a package. It's a T1. It's about 37,000 gallons per day. Yes.
At this point in time, I'd like to open this resolution up to the public. Would anybody in the public wish to be heard on this resolution? Okay.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. It's really probably more a question. As I read the resolution, because you wish, they wish to, and you wish to, or you recommend that they decommission
that's
this package
desire,
plant, yes, that requires them to get Exemption 11, which requires that they have a water use and conservation management plan.
This would be an amendment to the WQMP.
Okay. Does... will there be anything else to the Water Use and Conservation Management Plan, given that there are three HUC 14s that are all in deficit? Are you, will this Water Use and Conservation Management Plan talk about more than just the exemption?
Yes. The Water Use and Conservation Management Plan addresses the net water availability of the HUC 14s that will be influenced by the decommissioning of this plant. And there are three of them. So it will be a complete analysis of the plant.
Okay,
and
because
the surrounding HUCs.
Yes, it would be. It would
it's
be.
It's right by Lake Mohawk.
Yes, it would be very helpful. I'm in no way am I suggesting this not happen. That's not what I'm suggesting.
I didn't think so.
But what I'm requesting, what I'm requesting is that more information be provided to the public, because we're left guessing as to what's going to be in the Water Use and Conservation Management Plan, and that's why I'm asking these questions. Right now, it could be just for the Exemption 11.
It's for the three HUCs that are identified in the resolution, and this is to approve us to work with the SCARTA and their engineers to develop that scope of work.
Okay. And at what point will we get some idea what sort of things are going to be included, not just in this Water Use and Conservation Management Plan, but in all Water Use and Conservation Management Plans? We've got to come up with a better word for this.
That's not something you should be answering. The executive director should probably be answering that question.
And he left.
Any other comments, Ms. Summer, on this application?
I thought, Margaret, you knew everything. That's what he said.
Sometimes, well, you know, what can I say?
Almost.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on this application? Yes, sir.
My name is David Shope, and I am presuming that the water supply for this package plant is from the three HUC 14 areas, is that correct? Is that the water source that goes to this package plant?
The three HUCs that have been identified would be influenced by the transfer of the recharge from this plant into the ground versus going to Sussex County MUA, which will then discharge somewhere else. So it'll change the net water availability for three HUC 14s.
Oh, to the negative?
Yes, yes.
Well, the three HUC 14s are already in an artificial deficit because crafters of this law, in their infinite wisdom, has declared that the Highlands Preservation Area is an eternal drought situation. So why don't you get real and use the rainfall data that exists from independent sources other than the legislature's Einsteinian wisdom, and determine the real capacities of these HUC 14 areas before you go any further and dole out money like peanuts to professionals. This is nothing more than a continuation of the Full Employment to Professionals Act, which is really what the Highlands Act has devolved to since its inception. So I object to this resolution.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wish to speak on this resolution? Seeing none, any further board comments? Seeing none, roll. Oh, sorry.
On this particular resolution?
On this resolution. Sorry. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Alstead?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler?
Yes.
Councilmember
yes.
Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Aye.
Councilmember Mengucci?
Yes.
Councilmember Richco?
Yes.
Councilmember Sabatich?
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefang?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton? Chairman Ryan?
Yes. Next item up is consideration of resolution approval of the 2013 annual meeting schedule. Very similar to this year's, except
I've asked for the meeting to be pushed back to 5 o'clock. I've had many comments pushing it back, and it seems to be a little easier for most people. So can I get a motion on that, please?
Also
moved. Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the meeting schedule for 2013? Seeing none. I'm sorry. Anybody in the public wish to speak on our meeting schedule for 2013? Seeing none. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Alstead?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler?
Yes.
Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Aye.
Councilmember Mengucci?
Yes.
Councilmember Richko?
Yes.
Councilmember Savatich?
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefang?
No.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Vizioli?
Yes.
Did I win?
Councilmember Bowden?
I don't know yet.
Here's both. Yes,
yes.
Okay, sorry. Walt's not here. Chairman Rado?
Yes. Next item up is public comments. A reminder to limit your comments to 3 minutes, please. And at this point in time, we'll open it up. Please raise your hands if you have. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Deborah Post. I am part of the Inchester Township. The $6 billion of Highlands Act lost property values is a burden, a staggering burden, borne by the farmers and other good stewards of the open space who saw their net worths vaporize on the passage of the most egregious regulatory taking ever to happen in America, a nation with a Fifth Amendment that clearly states, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Land, as a store of economic value, is as ancient as civilization itself. Equity value stored in land deserves as much protection against theft as other stores of value. On April 19, 2012, council meeting, in connection with landowner just compensation, Mr. Tafank queried, "What's the motivation? There are only a few of them." Let me pose some answers to the "what's the motivation" question. Section 6N of the Highlands Act directs this council to recognize the need to provide just compensation to the owners of preservation area land. It's your job. The creation of a functioning TDR program within 18 months of the legislation's passage is a duty of this council under the Act. It's your job. Political promises need to be fulfilled. Senator Smith pledged that compensation funding would be forthcoming. Governor Christie once noted that the senator was apparently lying. There are not just a few landowners, there are hundreds. Just because few choose to subject themselves to the humiliation and disrespect encountered by any landowner who dares to speak at council meetings does not mean many harmed landowners do not exist. 5. Protection of disenfranchised harmed minorities is a fundamental American value. 6. The Fifth Amendment of the American Constitution directs compensation be paid. And finally, how about basic fairness and integrity? We have recently heard words, hopefully not too empty, from this council that just compensation would be addressed. May I suggest that step one might be to actually calculate in detail the size of the just compensation need. Evidencing how little anyone really cares about landowner compensation is the fact that no one has ever bothered to calculate the funding that would be required to compensate all fairly. You don't even know the size of the nut. Much of the raw data for such an analysis exists in this council's allocator tool database. I recommend that, by lot and block, the lost buildable lots be multiplied by the municipal average values of those lots by municipality, appraised values found in the RMP's TDR technical report appendix, and those multiplications then be summed. The sum then needs to be increased by a factor to represent the excessive and erroneous constraints used by the allocator tool, which really needs to be technically reviewed and revised, another subject. The constraint adjustment increase may be as high as 50%. That's based on empirical discussions with other landowners. Please do not confuse the arbitrary and capriciously discount approach of the HDC pricing with the appraised values for municipal lots found in the technical report. This is a straightforward arithmetical exercise which should be easily completed. You need to know how much funding is required before you can possibly begin to design a plan with any prayer of success.
Thank you, Ms. Post. Anybody else have a public wish to be heard?
Yes, sir.
My name is Pat Moffitt from PPAC. The economist Thomas Sowell said that there are no solutions in this world, there are only trade-offs. And I was looking at this deliberation tonight on this development here, and there were a number of aspects that did not come up. You've got an old stormwater facility there. Rainwater in this area has nitrate over one milligram per liter. Consider your two-tenths that you're concerned about from development. You've got an old stormwater system there that does not remove nutrients, does not remove pretty much anything. You're replacing it with a biofilter. And I think in the future, if you let that building just sit there, it's going to have that continuous old filter. It's going to be hitting the impervious surface with a milligram per liter of nitrate running off. You're getting a new system put in. You're obviously going to end up with less impacts. And I think you got, instead of just looking at one environmental variable, you've got to look at the trade-offs. You're never going to get everything you want, but on some of these things, you're getting a better deal. When you put trucks that only have to come out into the western area of New Jersey to pick up a load, they're not driving into the urban areas where air quality is worse, where traffic is worse. If you want to talk about sustainable development, this is the perfect place to put it. I'm not going to get into it here, but there were some things that were said tonight on Karst that I think are fundamentally incorrect, and I think could cause you some problems that down the line. It's a little bit more complex than just being in a sinkhole, and my 3 minutes aren't going to let me in it, but I'd be careful of how you're starting and looking at Karst and whether it's applicable or not applicable to any one side.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else in the public?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the council. My name is David Pfeiffer. I'm a Highlands Project Director for the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. I want to offer a couple of helpful suggestions about dealing with applications like the 700 Barton Road application. And refer you to your own RMP. The first item, though, is that the project information that you're provided by staff needs to be accurate. Kurt, I think you pointed out that this property is in the Raritan Basin and drains to the south branch of the Raritan. The project information sheet that you have indicates it's in the upper Delaware WQMP area. That would be incorrect. The wastewater management plan or facility is listed as the Musconetcom Sewer Authority. You have testimony that the site is septic supported that the Musconetcom Sewer Authority is the service provider. Those kind of factual confusions are not good, and we need to take a little care to see that the information that you're provided is accurate. Next, on the subject of Karst, we've had other redevelopment applications on Karst in the history of this organization. There is a section in your RMP on Karst. I was responsible largely for the comments that got it there during the development of the RMP. And prior to that, I served on a task force that created a municipal formula with North Jersey Resource Development Council about cars. What we have in the RMP is a pretty mild treatment of cars, but it does say that through project review, application for development in carbonate rock areas shall be required to conduct geotechnical investigations to locate any potential karst features, and those in contributing sub-watersheds must ensure that their projects will not contaminate groundwater in the carbonate rock areas. So there's a shall there, and it is quite possible through conformance to get this shifted to the municipality, so that you don't have to worry about reading geotechnical reports on karst. But the fact is that geotechnical reports in karst have certain requirements. And those are available in that North Jersey RC&D manual, which is supposed to be being used right now. What your RMP says is that the Highlands Council will develop a technical guidance manual for use by municipalities and counties that have land areas that are within or drained to carbonate rock areas. The guidance will contain requirements for a multi-phase geotechnical study to locate any potential karst features and potential hazards to public health and safety, structures, and groundwater quality. An existing guidance manual developed by the North Jersey Resource Conservation and Development Council will be used as one basis for the council's work. So what you have in hand is that North Jersey RC&D manual, and one of the requirements of the RMP was that the council would prepare a technical guidance manual for municipalities. I'm sure that none of you really want to go back and get a degree in geology, and particularly karst geology, in order to evaluate these kinds of things. But you do need to set up the professional framework that sees to it that good and accurate information is upstream.
Thank you.
Anyway, let me just, the other item was objective 1K4B, and I'll let you read that. It does require test borings to be done on any application for site plan or subdivision. So enjoy the limestone. It's a wonderful thing. I grew up in the country.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else in the public?
Good evening. Helen Heinrich, representing New Jersey Farm Bureau. I just have two requests. First of all, Mr. Kyle said that there is a lot of progress being made on implementation in the towns that have conformed. And, of course, the farm community is very interested in how this implementation goes forward. And is there some way we can track that in the online? It seems to me I remember a tracking sheet or something about the progress of implementation in each town. It would certainly be helpful to be able to follow that. And I understand you have a report in your packet, but is that going to be put online? We would sure like to see that.
I think so too.
Okay, good. No, it hasn't been updated?
In one case not since May, and in the other case not since June.
We'll get it updated.
Okay. Just saying, yes.
Yes, well, it's good news that the implementation is going forward, and we'd just like to know who's doing what. And the second thing is, I look at the schedule of the meeting starting at 5 o'clock, and I wonder if you could take some of that, what looks like extra money in your budget, and improve the lighting of the parking lot, because it is very dark walking down this road to if we're parking here and back. and it would certainly keep us from having to bring powerful flashlights. And
the township of Chester was a building. Don't be right on that.
We brought that up with Chester Township in conjunction with the bridge going away, so that problem is being addressed.
Oh, great. There you go. Instead of
head this time. The bridge
is going
away. Very good.
It's going away. It's going away tomorrow.
This bridge right here.
That bridge right there. So just like wave goodbye as you leave.
What's replacing it? Why is that?
A new bridge. Because it's structurally not so wonderful.
It's going to be a rope bridge.
Thank you.
Hey, we got to fund those landowners. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Since I know the slide.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. I first want to thank Margaret Nordstrom and Chris Dennis, who both came to our annual meeting last week and spoke about the challenges and vision they have for the Highlands, and it was very helpful, and we really appreciate it very much. Thank you.
We had a good time.
I thought she was very brave. There were 70 people there who you do not normally reach out to, so I think it was extremely useful. Secondly, indeed, there is one other thing you can do as far as what you call compensation, and that is support the Keep It Green campaign to ensure a stable source of funding for Green Acres program, which is likely to be going on for the next 12 months until the election of 2013. I think it is very important that you support that going forward.
Yeah, I've always supported that. My one issue is diverting money from landowners that have already been impacted towards new purchases.
We're talking here about just Keep It Green, and that's another issue. Thirdly, indeed, I completely agree with Helen. Your conformance, the tracking for conformance petitions and the tracking for implementation are out of date as of the 22nd of May for tracking of conformance petitions and the 25th of June. It's a very useful tool. We really welcome that it's there, but it does need to be kept up to date.
We will have it updated. I thought you were going to refer to the lights outside when you agreed with them.
Although I'm sure I probably agree with her on that too. But my last issue is the issue of the days between the closure of public comment and the council vote on any issue. And indeed, we have looked at this. I have to tell Margaret, I was incorrect, Margaret, when I told you that it had always been 10 days.
I know that.
But I can tell you exactly what it was. So at least since the 1st of January of last year, there are 43 decisions that have been public comment on. 22 of them, there was between at least 8 to 11 days after the close of public comment before the council took action. 15 of them, there was greater than 11 days. In other words, there was 86% of them were 8 days or more. There were 14% that were less than eight days, but that's a small number. And we really think that in order to be able to, with a clear conscience, talk about transparent and good government and providing an opportunity for a complete and thorough review of public comments, 2 days is really not appropriate. So we ask that in the future you have, not in the bylaws, just an unofficial policy that there should be at least 8 days for the council to review public comments before the council, or the council staff to review public comments before the council take any action on an issue that there have been public comments on.
Take it into consideration at this point, and I'll review it with Margaret and bring it back to council, but we meet once a month. So sometimes timelines are not exact. So to hold something up for a month that may be very positive that you might support can hurt.
I recognize what you're saying, but I think that it can be part of the planning. If there's a policy, then everybody knows going in, including the applicant can't turn around and demand that you got to pass it tomorrow. You can say, we have a policy that it must be 8 days, and that helps everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Yes, sir.
My name is David Shope, and I'm distressed to find that you're looking for a, quote, independent counsel. The last thing I would like to see is another independent counsel like Tom Borden.
Let me clarify that, and I should have done it sooner. The independent counsel, I think, is a wrong term. It's an attorney. It's a staff attorney, a lead attorney that will be here working primarily on these issues. It does not, at any point in time, remove the Attorney General's office.
Great.
And they will remain part of the staff, just maybe not at these meetings. It would be the staff attorney, just as we've had one of our staff attorneys here every meeting since Mr. Borden's left.
That's just, okay. So, great. I'm very pleased that
there is no separation. By law, the Attorney General's office is the lawyer for every
I understand.
In the state of New Jersey.
I understand that, and as a matter of fact, as I previously said, I've been going to New Jersey Water Supply Authority meetings that have 130 employees and manage three reservoirs and a vast huge budget compared to yours, and they've had for all the time I've been going there an attorney from the Attorney General's office.
And it will remain that way, again, by having staff attorneys. There's a lot that needs to be done legally. So the need was.
I thought you had attorneys on staff.
There was at one point 3.5 attorneys. We do not have 3.5 attorneys.
What are you down to now?
One.
One? That's enough. Okay. So much for attorneys. I'm very pleased that you're keeping a representative sitting right there from.
Whether he's here or not, I'm not sure yet, but he will be involved in. Awesome.
I'll be here in spirit.
In spirit.
Okay. And I was also distressed to hear that your executive director, Gene Feil, met with the Highlands Coalition. Why? How many acres does the Highlands Coalition own in aggregate? Debbie Post, who just left, owns more acres than the Highlands Coalition in total. Why are you meeting with these people? They are primarily paid environmental lobbyists, and why are you meeting with them? I'll leave that as a hypothetical. If you wish to answer it, I'll be glad to entertain your answer.
I'll just say it was a request, and they did not go there with an outline of what we are going to do, but I think it was more of
an informational
aspect.
Which way did the information flow?
I think from us to them, in all fairness. They had questions they wanted to ask about, you know, the council. And just to go a little bit further, you know, the director and I feel very strongly about getting out into the community. If you have an organization that would like to talk to us, we're more than happy to do that too. It doesn't do us any good just to sit here and not reach out to people who want to find out more about the operation here. We don't want to operate in secrecy.
Will minutes of this meeting be reduced to writing?
I beg your pardon there.
In other words, you had a meeting. Will it be reduced to writing? Will I be able to read the
No, it wasn't minutes.
Enough said. I got the answer I expected. Just for the record, the DEP does not recognize any pavement as pervious. Despite what the manufacturer may say, despite of what the rest of the world says, DEP says all pavement is impervious. The term pervious pavement came up by Tracy Carluccio in the application for the hugely expanded parking lot of a half an acre. I could have paved a parking lot in the amount of time it took you guys to decide about it. And Mr. Dressler used the phrase, he wanted to go slow on the idea of compensation for landowners and exploring TDRs and so forth and so on. He was afraid it was going to become a political football. This law was passed in 2004, at which time I was 68. I am now 76. Get real. If your strategy is to wait for us to die, this is your solution to the compensation issue. My oldest aunt just died at 103. So
we'll have you around for a while.
I hope so. So
thank you, Mr. Schilt, but I would like to state, when he mentions political football, there's our hands are tied to some degree, and I think I've said this to you before, and I'll say it again. We don't hold the purse strings. The legislature does. We can sit here and make up ways to try to find money and throw ideas at them that have all been bantered about and talked about before. It does not make them listen to us any more today than it did yesterday. The legislature has to understand that they put this law into effect. They promised the funding. They need to come together on something. We can come up with ideas all day long, but until they come together, they still have to go find the money and put it into place. I agree with you on that. I couldn't agree with you more. And we're trying to identify funds that can put into the TDR program to keep that moving forward, which is not easy.
No, I understand what you're saying, but let me say the legislature does not have to do anything and does not intend to do anything. Governor Christie, when he was up in West Milford, I think, day before yesterday, and I just heard a little snippet of it on the... You heard the same thing?
I haven't seen the...
Well, I haven't either. I didn't even hear the question. But basically what he said was the Democrats passed the law. The Democrats don't want to change the law. So the best thing we can do, and I'm paraphrasing at this point, is fully implement the law so that everyone feels the full force and effect. And I think I know what he meant when he said that. The law has things that you can do to make the water users start to feel the pain, the same pain that we are feeling up here. And if you want to talk to me about that, I'd be glad to discuss some issues with you. One of the things is stopping the pumping of sewage up to the Wampanoag Reservoir, where it goes round and round and round, and just increases the concentration.
Gave you longer time because I raised an issue with you and brought it up.
But right. You interrupted me several times.
It's always my fault. I learned that a long time ago.
It's your job as chair to take the blame.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any matter? Yes, ma'am.
Finally, me?
Yes. First time I'm seeing your hand. Sorry.
No. I'm kind of behind.
Mary Lee Fulcher, 10 Split Rock Road, Boonton Township, and please don't tell me this part, but the mind boggles at the complex issues that you deal with. I'm here about Split Rock, and to me, it's a simple issue. The ramp is a bad idea. I spoke to you last month about the abysmal stewardship of the DEP. They're really not minding the water. So today I'm going to tell you about Jersey City and how they, their protection strategy. They have a patrol vehicle that visits the reservoir daily. They have, like the DEP, a number of signs. I counted 9. I drove around and took pictures. And the interesting thing is that although these signs say public water supply and trespassing, tampering with this property is a federal offense, only 2 of them are anywhere near the water. Most of them are adjacent to the dam. Some are in the woods. And the only 2 that are near the water are the 2 on the spillway control house. And that's really not the water. They're saying, don't tamper with this building. So much for Jersey City. I took a mini survey of voters in the area. I stop by occasionally. And the general public and the voters don't seem to be aware that there is a proposal for a boat ramp. My survey was micro survey, 7 people, 4 anti, 1 neutral, first time there, 1 woman who needed a device to get her kayak up and down from the roof of her car, and a kayak for a woman to manage. This was kind of a heavy one. She really felt that a ramp would help her. I suggested that she perhaps had other alternatives like Clinton Reservoir, Canisteer, where the access was easier, but no, she likes Split Rock. And the final respondent to my question was a man who worked for a store that sells kayaks. So I guess we know why he felt the way he did.
The third thing that that I found out in talking with a fisherman kayaker was the source of some very craggy rocks, very very big sharp rocks that are at the bottom of the present path to the shoreline, the boat launch. And it seems that some time ago, I don't know exactly when, and I didn't get any original pictures, the DEP built what he called a wall. And the wall got washed out pretty much, except for these craggy rocks that are left, by Hurricane Irene. And has anybody done anything to do a repair, like a truckload of coarse gravel or rocks to fill it in? Nope. So, that being the case, you wonder if a ramp is built and there's any damage to the ramp, how soon might that be repaired? And in fact, with no surveillance, the ramp indeed would be a target for a wonderful invitational target for vandals. If you remember, I told you about a truck that had been driven into the reservoir until it was submerged. There were cars that were trashed. Rockaway Township is the entity that deals with all of this. The DEP is nowhere to be found. The only time the DEP shows up is if there's a fatality. And as far as I know, there's only been one, and that was a suicide.
Yeah.
Can't I have a couple more?
How about one more, man?
All right. All right. So, anyway, the wall. They create it and walk away, and not my problem. So I emphasize again, this is an optional project that poses a strong likelihood of contributing to the pollution of a Class 1 water body. I believe the Highlands Council has the power to determine the fate of this reservoir, and it can be continued with quiet enjoyment or increasing damage and exploitation. And if the council doesn't take care of this reservoir, who will? Thank you.
Well, and as we've said to you before, the jurisdiction is not with us at this point in time.
Well, you must have a say somewhere along the line, yes, I hope.
Not that I'm aware of.
Have you attended Rockaway Township council meetings and spoken about this? Because I would think that people in Rockaway would be concerned if this is a problem.
I spend more time at Rockaway Township Council meetings than I do at my own in Boone Township. And the planning board.
And what was their reaction?
They are very opposed to this. They're very opposed. But do you want to know what happened at a courtesy review, if I can have a minute?
Maybe after the meeting you could touch
their engineer at the courtesy review. All right, I'll tell you.
Carl makes excellent points about.
Yeah. They said they would have to go through their elected representatives. I don't know to what degree they've done that because as a resident, you know, as a non-resident, there's only so much I can do.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Seeing none, Mr. Darby?
I do have one more comment, and this actually came up a week and a half ago, Wilma. On an article that the State of New Jersey Highlands Coalition Award named in honor of Tewksbury resident. I believe that's you. And I'd just like to read this in the record, and at least on this side, I want to offer congratulations on any time you have an award named after you. It's pretty significant. So I just want to read into the record, Chairman. Tewksbury Township, New Jersey Highlands Coalition has established a new award named in honor of Wilma Frey, Senior Policy Manager of New Jersey Conservation Foundation and a resident of Tewksbury. In recognition of her long-standing work to preserve and protect the Highlands region. The Coalition has established the Wilma Frey New Jersey Highlands Volunteer Award, which will be presented for the first time at its annual meeting on October 2nd. No matter what side you're on any issue, dedication.
On the Highlands Council side, I say congratulations.
Dedication. That's it for the record. Congratulations.
Mr. Chairman, I just have one thing that something related to public comments. You mentioned our packets since last Friday when we were discussing the issue. Actually, we didn't get our packets till Monday. And just a request, I know that, you know, it's a lot of work to put together the packets, but if we could get them before the weekend, I think those of us who work very full days would appreciate having the weekend to look, if possible.
I apologize. I thought Friday was the normal.
Sometimes they come on Fridays, but lately they're coming later. And I think, you know, coming on a Monday during the day means really, I probably everyone here, what we do is we stay up late at night reading the packets in order to prepare for the meeting. So, you know, if we could get them before the weekend, I think it helps a lot. The other problem that we ran into this time is that the public comments were not ready because there was such a short timeline for the end of the public comment period. Between the end of the public comment period and the public meeting. So I think if we can push it back so there's that separation that was recommended by Julia Summers, that's also helpful, because what ended up happening is we got public comments and Annette went to special trouble to make sure everyone got them. But we did not see the response from the staff until we walked in here today. So that was really not enough time to digest what the staff had to say in response to that. So if we can get those with our packet, I think it'll make for better substantive review by the council members.
Okay. Mr. Hogue?
Real quick. There's a sample resolution in circulation to support a sustainable, dedicated funding source for open space. I'm sure you've all seen it. Some of us may have seen it. It's not going to really help the Highlands landowners. I've been chairman on the county open space for 9 years, chairman on the local open space committee. I'm a freeholder, and I hear constantly, why would we ever want to spend money on land that's already regulated out of? It's not worth it. We're not going to spend the money there. So if you do get this resolution, I'd like to see everybody add to it. Dedicated funding source for open space purchases that's just general, and compensation of Highland landowners, farm landowners. I would just like to see that added.
Thank you. Can I get a motion to adjourn, please?
Real fast. Eight years of New Jersey State ethics training has taught me that if I bring something and offer it to everybody, then everybody can partake in the staff. So there are cider donuts and homemade cider there as well.
I just
want to
see
you. Oh.
Now can I get that motion?
Some of them.
Six. All in favor?
Oh, yes.